What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Happy Friday, dudes and ladies. It is the Chris and Amy show. We got Hancock and Kelly with us, especially ladies. Hello. We have a fun.
That was creepy.
Well, yeah, of course it was creepy.
That was cool.
That's why. Wow. Come on, man.
Well, we're off to a good start.
Are we ever not? I think every time we start this show, there's something great that happens.
Magic.
314-436-7900. Calls and texts. You can drop us a voice message on the Odyssey app. Listen to us on the Odyssey app. You want to watch us? You can. We are on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. You should follow us on Twitter at Chris Amy KMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
President meeting with Vladimir Putin today, and it's happening in Alaska. When there are updates, we will tell you what those updates are.
And the city of St. Charles could use a data center to end the city's reliance on groundwater because they've had troubles with it. They were under a boil advisory yesterday. Might have seeped into this morning.
Cardinals dropped a series to Colorado a couple of days ago, but today they will begin a series against the New York Yankees, and that will be at Busch Stadium. There are tickets available if you want to head out to the ballpark tonight. 6:20 pregame on KMOX, 7:15 first pitch. So, Yankees are in town. I like when the Yankees are here.
No, it's fun. Yeah. They're a spectacle. Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
I think he might be injured, though.
He's got a little thing. I'm not exactly sure if he's going to be around or what. But
I bet that ballpark will be full.
It will not.
You don't think?
No.
For the Yankees?
Nobody.
What about Paul Goldschmidt?
Oh, I bet they would sell it out. Why wouldn't people want to go down and see Aaron Judge?
Well, we'll find out. I'm going to say it will not be anywhere near sold out.
Well, that would be really disappointing.
I'm going to say that the upper deck will be largely empty this
what?
Evening.
John?
I don't know about that.
An attitude like that.
Well, that's what I think is going
to
happen.
Let me tell you, at the beginning of the year when I was handing out my season tickets to folks, the Yankee tickets went first.
They're the hot,
then the Dodgers,
yeah, hot tickets.
Then the Cards Cubs, which, you know, they were empty this year.
Correct.
But I have a feeling when it came to Shohei, there was people there to see him. I mean, that's modern-day Babe Ruth on the field.
We'll
Aaron
see.
Judge, this guy's going to go down as one of the
we'll
greats.
We'll see. I will text you this evening, Michael.
You're going to be there?
I'm not going to be there.
Oh, okay.
I know a lot of people don't like the schedule, and I think a lot of players don't. The more, you know, you play every team every season instead of,
right.
You know, you play maybe the Yankees this year, and then in 3 years you play them again. I kind of like this.
I like it.
I like that you play them every single season. I like that every other year they get to come to your stadium. And I was always really, I guess, impressed or in awe of the Yankees and the way they travel. Because they have a huge traveling team. They have their own security that goes with them, like they're rock stars. And prior to games, you have just crowds of people around their dugout.
Well,
you know, just because they want to get a look at the Yankees, it's really
that's cool.
That and
it's fun.
They have a traveling media corps that would rival the presidents.
Yeah.
I mean, and everybody's got somebody on the Yankee beat. I mean, it's kind of cool that they come to town.
I'll tell you what, the manager over there is under a lot of heat right now. The
Aaron
Yankees,
Boone.
Yeah, they've not been playing well. The Toronto Blue Jays have, to everyone's surprise, have gone into the first place in that American League Eastern Division, and the Boston Red Sox are surging.
Yeah. It's a tough place to be the manager. New York.
Yeah.
New York and Boston, really tough. Our guys, he gets a lot of heat, but you know, I think we've
We're
talked about
nice.
Marmol. Yeah, but we are.
I mean, well, let me rephrase
relatively
this.
Relatively speaking,
the
yes.
The city, relatively speaking, like you guys, the Gas House Gang, Bernie, Wheeler, I mean, they've criticized the team. They've been very critical of the team. They've been honest about the team, right? But I feel like we're fair. We're not obsessive. My example would be the Montreal media for the Canadiens or the Toronto Toronto media for the Maple Leafs, they have their own TMZ station.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the Maple Leafs. I mean, it's insane.
We're getting close to 60 years since the Maple Leafs have won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
It's just unthinkable.
I mean, to have, I kind of want them to do it. You know, I know a lot of teams don't like, or a lot of people don't like the Canadian teams, them or the Vancouver Canucks, for whatever reason, everybody hates Vancouver. But I, if the Maple Leafs do it, I think those people have suffered enough.
Yeah,
agreed. Suffered.
Let them see
And they've
it.
Got Craig Berube there.
I know. The chief. But here's the thing with the St. Louis media, because like I said, I think we're very honest and critical, but there's still a Midwest nice that is different. We're different than New York media and fans.
Well,
we just are. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. But and I think that's one of the reasons that like a Tony La Russa flourished here, because think about it. When the Colorado Rockies are in town, you know, Ali Marmol is going to face 5-6 reporters, right? The, you know, KMOX and the local TV stations. The Yankees, that guy's got 40 people in front of him no matter where he's at. He's leaving the hotel. He's getting into his car. You're going to – that type of pressure will cause people to say and do stupid stuff.
And even just the sheer size of the fan base, the millions. And we have a huge fan base here too, but it's spread out over an entire Midwestern region.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because Cardinals territory is pretty big, right? Yeah. So that's why the ballpark is, when they are good, is always full, because you have people traveling from – you know, Arkansas and Tennessee. I mean, you got people coming from all over to go to Cardinals games.
Kentucky?
Yeah.
Apropos of nothing, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but
right.
I feel like John Hancock might be helpful in this.
Oh.
Ronge and I were talking about rating our favorite Boones.
What?
Daniel Boone, Aaron Boone.
Yeah.
Who else?
Was it Debbie Boone?
Boone Pickens.
Boone Pickens?
T. Boone Pickens. What about Boone Valley?
Boone Valley, there you go.
What about this one? Economic Boone.
I love a good economic Boone.
I do, too. I just think we should rate our favorite Boones. But wait, who's T-Bone Pickens?
T-Boone Pickens. Okay. Isn't he cornered the silver market, did
I
he
think.
Not?
Isn't he the one that gives How all the money to one the of the Oklahoma
well, somebody
schools?
Look into that. Let's go to the research.
T-Boone Pickens.
T-Boone Pickens.
Yeah. I keep thinking of Slim Pickens. That's who I'm thinking of.
I'm a little partial to Booneville, Missouri, because I wrote a piece of music called the Booneville Stomp.
Now, that's just right outside of Columbia, right?
Yeah, it's past Columbia.
Yeah. It's got a bridge.
Highway 70.
See?
On Highway 70.
There's there Booneville Bridge, and they've got the casino there now.
Uh-huh.
Great little community. Cooper County.
Could one call it a Boontown?
Yeah.
Wow. A Boontown.
No, that's Boontown.
Is there any stomping in this Booneville stomp?
Yes.
There is?
There is.
Yeah. How do you recreate the stomping? Do you stomp with your foot?
Yeah.
When
I played at Six Flags, they had I was on a little wooden platform that was maybe 8 inches
high. Are you wearing a red and white pinstripe shirt?
No. Yeah, sometimes. Okay. But I had the vest with the sequins on it. That was my thing. Oh. And then the little bolo tie.
I would have given anything to see this.
I got a bolo tie.
I got a picture of it
Did you wear one of those old-timey hats, too?
Yeah, buddy. A derby.
Okay, so you're playing at Six Flags.
And I got this little 8-inch platform, you know, wooden, and I would stomp on it, you know, with my left foot.
Does it make a noise? Yeah.
Oh, it was loud. You could hear it all over the park.
Chris, have you not seen John play yet?
I have not. I've heard.
Oh, so he'll.
I've heard recording of it.
Hopefully, we'll have another Christmas play or something sometime in the future or something where you get to see it. But this guy, he moves around like a jumping bean when he's playing, and he stomps and he moves. He does it all.
Does he have the symbols attached to the cable, which is on his leg, and then he moves it?
No, but Jelly Roll Morton used to play with a drumstick in his
shoe. Jelly Roll Morton.
And he would tie a wood block, you know, the wood blocks that drummers use.
Yeah.
He'd tie it on the stool leg.
Okay.
And he'd put a drumstick in his shoe, and he'd tap the wood block with his drumstick while he played.
When in life do you get the nickname Jelly Roll, and when you accept it, does it just ruin your personal psychology?
He was a fascinating guy.
Is he a big dude?
Not that big. No,
he was a current Jelly Roll. He's a big dude.
But Jelly Roll Morton claimed to have invented jazz. And
that's a huge claim.
He had a huge ego, but he also had the most unique style of playing the piano in that era of anyone. And he did this series of recordings at the end of his life for the Library of Congress, where he tells the stories and the history of the music. Fascinating. Jelly Roll Morton, look him up. And his music, his Creepy Feeling is a great piece by Jelly
Creepy
Roll Morton.
Creepy Feeling?
Mm. Yeah.
I hear that every day, every time I show up to this studio.
No, stop it. What, is it because of Tyler? That's not nice. All right. Well, you guys want to hang out for a while? You have to.
We talk about it. You have to. Contractually, we're obligated to do something
Yeah,
like
you,
that.
Yeah, you got to be here. Hancock and Kelly with us. John Hancock, Michael Kelly. It is the Chris and Amy Show. They are with us until 10 o'clock, and it's the entire hour from 9 to 10 every Friday here on 104.1 FM KMOX.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX. We have Hancock and Kelly with us today here. It is a Friday. We're glad you're a part of our day today.
Tickled to death.
Tickled. Just saw the photo of John playing the piano at Six Flags. It looks great.
He's got his mustache. That stash, huh?
I love it.
Well, that's Tom Selleck-esque.
Well, many people have made the comparison.
Likened you to Tom Selleck.
You know, yeah. Tom Selleck is making a huge comeback on the socials.
Really?
He is the number one hot guy on the socials
Tom
right now.
Tom Selleck?
Mm-hmm. Like the old Tom Selleck, like getting out of the water during Magnum P.I.
The short shorts and the Hawaiian shirts.
Not the one who's running the police department in New York in Blue Bloods or whatever it is.
No, this is old Tom Selleck. Yeah.
How cool was Tom Selleck with his Ferrari and his buddy who had a helicopter?
I said, Tom TC. Selleck is really handsome.
That was TC.
I was like, he was really handsome. Like, wow, why did I never like see him as that handsome? And my dad goes, because you were three.
You know what he did for his workout every day?
Mm. What?
He would go into the ocean and tread water for, 30, 45 minutes.
That's it?
Almost, yeah. So he would tread water in the open ocean.
That's a lot of activity, though.
And that's in the... Yeah.
For 40 minutes, treading water?
It's in the show. That was full body.
It's kind of like this program here.
What was the name of the guy who got to live at his house?
What's his name? Yeah. Played by John Hillerman.
Yeah, so he would go out and...
Who got to live in Tom
Selleck's
house?
He was like Cato Kaelin. Tom Selleck lived at a rich guy's house in Hawaii.
Yeah, it was played by John Hillerman.
Wait,
the
character's
name,
life or in the show?
No, in the show.
In the show.
Oh. His name will come to me eventually because I'm having a senior moment, but he was played by John Hillerman.
Yeah.
But why did Tom Selleck live in this rich guy's house?
Why not?
I think that he was like this own guy's personal private investigator or something, but he lived like Cato Kaelin on the property. And it was this like huge Hawaiian mansion, right? And he'd go tread water, and then he'd go solve crimes in his Ferrari with his buddy in the helicopter.
Tread water, solve crimes.
The buddy.
Tread water, solve crimes.
Maybe while he's treading water, he's like thinking about it. Yeah, like that's when he ruminates on all the evidence.
I think he was out there thinking about that stash because that was like one of the first stashes I remember, other than Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, Burt Reynolds had a great one.
Didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Higgins.
Higgins.
Oh, Higgins.
Higgins, my man.
Higgins.
Yes.
How about Cato Kaelin had a great setup, didn't he?
Well, till he didn't. Well, I mean,
he got to be famous because of it.
Yeah.
What is he doing now?
Probably
he's
a podcast.
Still probably making money off of the fact that he's
probably
was
appearances
a
and podcasts.
Yeah.
Because he heard OJ running by after he murdered people.
Cato Kaelin has been in this studio because Jane Duker has a picture with him. And I believe it was right here at KMOX that Cato Kaelin came through and she got to interview him.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. In my head.
What was he doing in town?
I don't
promoting
know.
Promoting his book, probably.
You know, yeah. Exactly. Excellent point, John.
I'm sure he has a book.
C. Dick Run.
Would it make sense?
The OJ that I knew.
The OJ I knew. Would it make sense in my little kid head that for some reason I remember Cato Kaelin and Ken Starr being in the news at the same time? Would that make sense time-wise? Because I remember as a kid, I didn't know which guy was connected with which.
So the OJ trial was in
94, and Ken Starr was early 90s. Was it?
Was 98. It that late?
Well, he had been.
Oh, that was the Monica.
The Monica Lewinsky stuff, thing, 97, 98. Yeah. So they were close, and Ken Starr had been. Was he Solicitor General, maybe? I can't remember.
He was special counsel.
But he was special counsel for the Clinton stuff. But the Clinton stuff was after the OJ stuff. So yeah, so, that's right. Stuff.
Generally the same time period.
You had election, then you had Clinton stuff.
I just remember them being in the news a lot because my papa would listen to the news. He listened to KMOX, listened to Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, yeah? Poor man.
Yeah. So, well, I think he chose it.
Oh.
It was of his own volition.
Oh, I loved early Rush Limbaugh.
I bet you did.
I did. I loved it. I mean,
really? How early? Like, what are you, what?
I listened to him when he was on KIBV. In Belleville. Long before he was ever on KMOX.
So could you tell a big difference in early Rush to late Rush?
Well, he became a whole lot different in the Trump era. He became a lot less what you would call, you know, traditional conservative, movement conservative, which is what he always had been. And then he really became a populist as the Trump wave started taking place. And a lot of those guys, Mark Levin, who had a radio show, was virulently anti-Trump in the early days. Big Ted Cruz supporter, Mark Levin being a known conservative. And now you listen to Mark Levin and, you know, he's all in.
You know, I'll tell you, when Rush had the TV show.
Yeah.
Not on Fox. Was it NBC? It was like a late night.
It was, yeah. It was a half hour show.
Yeah, I felt like it was a weekend or I remember watching it a few times thinking the guy's pretty funny.
He was funny.
And then he became what he did.
So this is an honest question. It's not being snarky in any way. Did he get angrier or was he always kind of angry? Because I felt like he was pretty angry, my memories of him.
I mean, he would have what the guy had, which having done this now for a few years myself, I mean, what he was able to do as a one-man show
insane
without phone calls, without guests, is, you know, remarkable. And to do it as long as he did it, as effectively as he did it, with the ratings he got, he is a unique figure in broadcast history, regardless of what you think about you know, his viewpoints or anything else. He immense talent.
Do you think, in fairness, if he were to look back at his career, that the greatest thing that ever happened to him was Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
Because he made his bones as a result of the Bill Clinton stuff and became kind of the antithesis to Clinton. Rode that horse as long as he could.
He did. And Obama was good for him, too. But, I mean, it really didn't matter. His numbers held very steady, regardless of what the politics of the moment were. And his philosophy, his ideology remained incredibly steady until the Trump era, which was towards the end of Rush's life.
My experience with Rush is different. John's was impacted and stuff. He wasn't a part of our life. I mean, in fact, we kind of pushed away from KMOX during that period. I mean, we'd listen to the stuff in the morning and Cardinal baseball and stuff. But as a family, I don't remember Rush Limbaugh being on. And
I've had a few people say that to me, too.
Yeah.
They don't remember Rush?
They turned away when Rush was on.
Yeah. I mean, it was the case for my situation. And it's because it was just it was just the cutting edge of this new found disrespectfulness that has been taken to a whole new level now. But the slur, the kind of innuendos and stuff that he'd say about something, he was kind of pushing the edge, almost on a Howard Stern-like angle from a conservative standpoint.
Sure. There was a lot of sarcasm. And
implications that Hillary is this and, you know, the same things they've done to Michelle Obama and that kind of stuff.
Interesting. Well, like you said, John, regardless of your political beliefs, it's really hard to solo show. For what, 4 hours?
3 hours.
3 hours. Yeah. And he did it. I mean, I couldn't do that. It was a skill.
Day after day.
I know somebody who could do it better than him, longer and better than him.
Kevin Wheeler?
Totally. Hello.
What?
Hello.
That
man could have a telethon and go for 3 days.
Kevin Wheeler?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then when he leaves the show, he does another show in the office.
Does he? Really?
He's doing a show in the office. He comes in, does the show with Glover. He leaves, he does another show.
He's good.
He never doesn't talk.
He's good.
It's a good point.
I've never seen it. He's a machine.
And I kind of, you know, when I get finished, and we're not on that long anymore, but when we would do several hours, you know, when I get out of here, I just don't talk. I don't feel like talking. I don't want to talk to anybody.
I kind of agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I will say the first time.
That's part of our relationship.
When John doesn't talk.
Yeah, he just quits talking.
He's tired.
The first time I was, you know, really on the radio, because I didn't have a background in this at all. And Steve, our boss, has said, you know, just talk. Like, You're having a conversation. Say what you know. And I don't know what I was talking about. It was probably, I mean, it was politics. It was some controversial issue. And I like laid out the issue. I gave out all the facts I knew. I gave out all my opinions. And I looked at the clock. It had been 43 seconds. Oh my gosh.
I'm out of material.
And scene.
And scene.
You imagine doing a stand-up bit and you're like, okay, they give me 10 minutes and you go through all of your jokes and then you're at minute four, you look at the clock and you still have 6 minutes to go.
Oh my gosh.
I'm out, guys. Totally out.
It is a special talent to be able to sit and, well, to do what you guys do, period, with each other. But it's even unmore like what Charlie used to do. Back in the day before you joined them, Amy, where you can do a show by yourself. I mean, just it's for difficult. Those who think it's easy to be on the radio, but get in a shower and talk to yourself for 5 minutes.
What do you think I do every morning?
Do you? But I mean, just try it. Try for 3 minutes.
I do a little singing in there, though.
Yeah, I do, totally.
Yeah.
Les Miserables?
No. It's mostly my own compositions. I've written new pieces for my grandson, Nico.
Ah.
And he likes it.
And you've made
he
up smiles. Words to these songs?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I'll sing it to you on the break.
Why on the break?
Well, because I don't want to destroy the whatever shred of audience still exists out there.
Oh, we're doing fine. We're doing just fine. Don't worry about that.
So are these existing songs that you're putting new words to?
Nobody. I write the music and the lyrics.
He's the Taylor Swift of Pawpaws.
Well done.
And he loves it, man. He spits that pacifier out when I start singing, and he puts a big grin on his face.
You're winning him over, too, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
This guy, I'm telling you, is what you would think Bono walked into the room when his grandkids see him. They go running up to him. They'll leave whatever they're doing. I was at the Greek festival out in somewhere out in West County and saw John's grandchild come running across the room of 200 people to see him.
Oh,
yeah,
he's a stud.
That's a little Nico.
John Hancock.
Did you ever think you'd be that guy that walks around and keeps showing pictures and stuff?
Yeah.
But it used to be him on the piano and the bowler hat.
Hey, look at me. That's Hancock and Kelly here with us. Till 10 o'clock, the Chris and Amy show goes until 12. Then it's the Gas House Gang. We'll talk some Cardinals baseball and more. Starting at noon, Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, and me. So no reason for you to leave KMOX.
Chris Ranji, Amy Markscores, John Hancock, Michael Kelly in Studio B.
Here we are.
Meanwhile, in Alaska, President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are meeting to discuss a potential ceasefire. I know you guys chatted about it. What are your thoughts on this meeting, if anything comes of it?
I don't expect much to come from it. I don't think you're going to get a ceasefire out of this meeting. And Donald Trump has downplayed the expectations for that now over the last 48 hours or so. So that would tell me that there's not going to be a ceasefire. What I will find interesting is we've had these moving goalposts of sanction deadlines from the president and sanctions and even perhaps tariffs on Russia, which is one of the nations in the world that we haven't tariffed at this point.
Makes sense, right?
And so I will be interested to see if there is no ceasefire, which I think is almost a certainty, whether or not the president then follows through on this threat of imposing more sanctions and would do it in concert with our Western allies. But, if he gets a ceasefire out of this and a commitment to negotiate between Putin and Zelensky, that will be an unmitigated success for Donald Trump. But... And I hope that's what happens, but I don't think it's going to.
So I'm no foreign policy expert. It's only what I read, et cetera. But it seems to me this first meeting is really a win for Vladimir Putin and the fact that he gets to return to the world stage after being, ostracized for the last 6-8 years, whatever it's been. And he's getting to sit with the United States president. So this first meeting, I think, is a win for Vladimir Putin. If the second meeting happens, where we actually do try to get to some type of compromise, which will require a ceasefire. So I guess that's what the president has to accomplish. Then President Trump may have pulled off what many people, including the Europeans, think was impossible.
Yeah. The ultimate end of this war is very difficult for me to see because it would involve Ukraine giving up territory that Russia has already you know, possessed through the last 3 years. And that's something Ukraine doesn't want to do. It's something that we've never, in my understanding, in the history of America, we've never asked an ally to cede territory that's been invaded by a foreign adversary. And I think it's going to be very difficult to get there. And the people of Ukraine, I think, have no interest in ceding territory. But I think it would take that, coupled with verifiable security guarantees on the part of the U.S. and the West to protect Ukraine from further invasion by Russia.
And one of the red lines for Putin is he doesn't want Ukraine to be a part of NATO.
Correct.
If he's willing to accept the property, I wonder if he's willing to accept Ukraine going into NATO.
I think that's a bridge too far for Putin. And I think you can provide security guarantees without NATO membership for the West. And it comes down to, you know, can you trust these the U.S. and Western European allies to actually follow through on the security guarantee? Because, you know, you've got a situation where Putin has shown over and over and over and over again. He's gone into Georgia. He's gone into Belarus. He invaded Crimea and took that over. He's invaded Ukraine. There's zero reason to trust and believe that Vladimir Putin's not going to continue this kind of offensive into Eastern Europe.
Interesting, right, that Donald Trump, who kind of views everything through a real estate developer's eye, you know, remember he was going to chop up Gaza, we're going to make it beautiful, blah, blah, blah. He just wants to get the deals. Obviously, that's the new style of world leadership going up against the old style Russian. I mean, Vladimir Putin's not new to the scene. I mean, he's been KGB. This is a man who knows his enemy, who knows how to deal with them. You're going to have a fish out of water dealing with an angler. It's going to be interesting to watch these two guys deal with each other.
Well, the envoy, if
President Trump is manipulated or if vice versa.
The envoy we've been sending over there, Stephen Witkoff, is also a real estate developer.
Yeah, the guy sees everything as a real estate deal.
So how does Vladimir Putin agree to a ceasefire that doesn't make him look weak or make him look like he failed in his mission because he's trying to rebuild the Soviet Union, because he is, telling Russians that Ukraine is rightfully ours. So how does he back off without looking like a failure? Because it doesn't seem like that is going to be an option for an autocrat who wants to rebuild the USSR.
Yeah, that's why I don't think you're going to see a ceasefire out of this thing today. And, you know, the other thing that Putin, he's got his nation in a war posture, and which even in a dictatorship, people kind of rally around the flag, you know, mm-hmm. And he's got his people convinced that there's a bunch of Nazis running Ukraine, which is ridiculous, but that's what they're telling the people of Russia, that enough of them are eating that up. I'm a little surprised that as many troops have been lost there, there's got to be hundreds of thousands of family members of now deceased soldiers. And I'm a little surprised you haven't seen any kind of a larger uprising.
Yeah.
Is it fear that they don't?
It has to be.
Because they have to be thinking. I would think, but who knows what they know.
Told, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, who knows what they know? But I would think that people there would go, wait a minute, what are we doing over there?
Especially since they're 20 years old. The USSR is nothing to them in the sense that they don't remember it. There's no glory.
Oh, yeah, they don't care about it. Right?
They don't care about that. You know, Putin, former KGB agent, that's what he lives for. But you have young guys dying for a war that doesn't mean anything to them, or ostensibly may not mean anything to them. Also, if you obviously want the war to end, you want there to be a ceasefire, and maybe Trump's the guy to do it because he admires Putin and he can play into Putin's ego somehow. But do you then just forget that Putin is a war criminal that has promoted not just killing innocent civilians, but mass rape, stealing Ukrainian children, kidnapping them, brainwashing them?
By the thousands.
But we already are looking the other way. This man is coming to United States soil. We're not going to some neutral place, which if you wanted to keep that posture that he's a war criminal, you would not allow him in the United States without arresting him.
And it's a place that he probably wishes he had. He probably wishes of that the Russia still owned Alaska.
Absolutely. The student of history that Putin isn't limited to, you know, the last 80 years.
It's, right.
He views Alaska as part of Russia. I mean, there's no question about it.
John,
that.
And it's always, it's a big deal when heads of state come to the United States. Mm-hmm. And I know it was a big deal, like, when Castro was invited by the journalists to come to New York, but he was invited before he had taken over Cuba, and then suddenly it was a big ordeal because, wait a minute, now you have Castro coming to the United States on the invitation of non-governmental entities. Who was the last autocrat, dictator, war criminal that we invited to U.S. soil? I'm trying to think.
I can't think. I mean, Gorbachev, you know, but that was to sign an historic arms reduction
and
agreement.
We went there. And both. President Reagan went there as well.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing that's most interesting to me, and I'm sure they're doing it for security, et cetera. But the fact that we're meeting on United States soil and not a neutral place, I feel like we've surrendered that authority of saying this man's a war criminal, you know, and all the threats of we'll arrest him, we're going to hold him to justice. No, we're not. We're hosting him.
He just bombed a bunch of kids.
Yeah, and he's on our soil, literally sitting with our people. We're protecting him.
This is absolutely already a win for him.
Totally. Oh, yeah. He's back on the world stage.
Yep.
He's been sitting and remember all the pictures we see? He's afraid to leave Russia. He got to go to the United States, the people leading it against him. Why he didn't choose to meet in Greenland or, you know, one of those places where it's a neutral thing and you could keep the posture of he's a bad dude. We surrendered that.
Yep.
Fun stuff.
I can't argue with that.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. We'll try to solve more of the world's problems when we come back. It is the Chris and Amy Show. You can text in at 314-436-7900. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. We are at Chris Amy KMOX.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Hancock and Kelly with us for just a bit longer on this Friday morning. It's the Chris and Amy Show. Guys, we've been watching what's happened in Washington, D.C. with the federal takeover of the police department.
Yep.
And apparently today, the Metropolitan Police Department in D.C. is referring all media inquiries to the federal government now, which seems like a thing that doesn't typically happen. And there is the threat, or at least the president has threatened to do this in other cities. Even though D.C.'s crime rate has fallen, it seems like and we are finding out that it's not that these troops are being sent to the highest crime areas in D.C. They're being sent to places where people can see them. So it seems like eyewash to me. This is political theater from my perspective. How do you guys see it?
But it's a little bit more than that, though, right? Because there's long term consequences to what's up to. Look, sending in the National Guard to D.C. for a month, okay, great. This is not going to correct this problem. The simple thing that the president could do, should he wanted to help communities like, I don't know, St. Louis, et cetera, is release federal dollars for police officers so that we just don't have a temporary Band-Aid of whatever this vanity project he's up to, and we have a real solution.
I don't like the expansion of executive power. I've been pretty consistent on that throughout the course of my adult life, and this is without question an expansion of American power. If a liberal president, in the wake of a school shooting, dispatched federal troops into some rural community where they've had their school shut up.
This is a great idea.
And they start saying that it's a national emergency, there are too many of these long guns, and they start going and taking people's guns away from them under the auspices of a presidential edict because of a state of emergency that exists. I suspect that the folks that are applauding what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now would not be pleased with that result. And so there's a reason why our Constitution and the founders of this country created a government that had limited powers. And when you blow those holes wide open and walk through them, which is what we're doing right now, you're creating a future that is very unstable and very troubling, at least to me.
But over and above the policy, it's absolutely insulting and absurd to think that this president, of all presidents, is dispatching the National Guard into D.C. under the auspices that it's an emergency. We had an emergency on January 6th. There were people trying to kill officers, senators, congressmen, and they asked him to bring in the National Guard then, and he wouldn't do it. But he's doing it for this window dressing play. It's just so transparent, and it's unfortunate.
So, I mean, that was my question, you know, yesterday when we talked to Major Garrett. Well, I thought, you know, well, wait a minute. You know, it's under his purview. It's his prerogative to call in the National Guard into D.C. now. I thought he said he didn't have that power on January 6th years ago. And so that discrepancy doesn't make sense to me. Which one does he think it is? And I will also say,
this is shocking to you.
I know, it's shocking. But also as an important note, though, does it matter? And it probably doesn't matter to Trump. Maybe he doesn't know this. I don't know. But, I mean, D.C. does have unique status as a federal city.
Right.
Not as a city of a state, which is why he actually does have the power to call in the National Guard into D.C. As a matter of legal perspective, I think that matters greatly. As a matter of Trump wants to do what he wants to do, it probably doesn't matter. But if you're going on a technicality, it is a federal city, which matters, right?
That's true. And it remains to be seen if he is, in fact, going to follow through on his speculation that he could do this in Los Angeles and Oakland and other cities.
Yeah. Chicago. Yeah.
But then again, that's like, well, then that's where the legal issue comes in, because those aren't federal cities. Right. They're under the auspices of the state.
But we're in a city that, how would St. Louis, well, first of all, he's not going to do it because it's a red state and he's trying to do this whole Democrat thing. But how would St. Louis react to the federal government wanting to get into our policing situation? I don't know that people would be pushing back at it too much. But the simpler solution, what the president could be doing, is sending federal resources to a police department that's, you know, short on folks.
You know, and I've been doing a little bit of looking at policing across the country. Every place is low on police officers. I mean, it's not a unique St. Louis problem. New York is thousands of officers mm-hmm. under census. And in most cities in this country, there just simply aren't enough police officers. It's a real problem.
So what's the answer? Are we going to start making police robots?
Well,
oh my gosh, that's
we're making
terrifying.
Everything robots.
I hate robots. I'm sorry.
I'm with you. Yeah, but it's what's going to be the solution? Everything other solution for we don't have people to do this, we don't do that. We still need to police ourselves. Yeah. People are still going to act like fools.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it probably will change is just cultural currents. You know, what is the cultural shift? I mean, for a while, going into policing was either not popular because people weren't fond of law enforcement, or the people who were in law enforcement were telling their kids, like, hey, it's not a great time to be a police officer right now, right? You had all of those and not generational. What is it called when it's a lot of times, if your grandparent, your dad was a police officer, you'll become one as well.
Legacy is a fine word for that.
Okay. So you have a lot of that, and those were fading away, and cops were retiring earlier because maybe they didn't feel supported. They didn't feel supported by the public. I think we saw a lot of that after the Michael Brown. I think it was escalated after the George Floyd riots. So I think for a while it's going to be tough, and until you have maybe a cultural shift where suddenly it is seen as more attractive to go into law enforcement.
And Amy, what you're pointing out is also, I think, important, in that, you know, Democrats, our pushback to this is we're walking around waving statistics, right? We heard it from Mayor Jones. Oh, crime's going down, homicides. I wonder if this is a consequence of that behavior that we had for nearly 10 years, where we did demonize the police, where we did have our elected officials wanting to defund the police, that even though the stats have gotten there, people don't feel it because they've been ingrained for the last 10 years that the police, you know, have been problematic. I don't know. I kind of feel like I do believe that stats are getting better and that crime is going down in the country. But I think this is a bad argument for the Democrats to be making, because even those of us who live here don't feel it yet. I don't feel as safe as I did 10 years ago. I just don't. I don't know. Call me whatever you want. I just don't feel as safe as I do.
I feel exactly the same amount of safe as I did 8 years ago when I moved back here.
Yeah. Well, see, I think it feels different. Yeah.
I used to walk the Cardinal games 10 and 20 blocks that I would not walk anymore.
That's interesting. Because I just don't have that same feeling.
Yeah. And then I'm on Michael's side. I feel that I used to walk a lot more from here to the ballpark. Blues games. Yeah, and the ballpark and the Blues games that I didn't have trouble with that I don't feel as comfortable. And I do think it's a lot of times it's multiple things. Before 2014, the Loop was really coming up. The Del Mar Loop was where it was at.
Yeah.
And there were, I can name four things that absolutely killed it. There's the Michael Brown incident and riots, COVID, George Floyd, and that stupid Blanken trolley, which put a lot of businesses, made them shutter their doors. And when you put all four those things together, the Loop is not what it used to be. And I hope it can start to gain some momentum again. But that those things hurt the Loop. It also hurt the Grove, which for a while was coming up so quickly, they said the Grove is going to surpass the Loop.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's the other thing about just crime. Police help solve crime, police presence. The other thing that stops crime is mass numbers of people. So if you had a city in a downtown where if you're walking from here to Busch Stadium, you're with 150, 200 other people, you're safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how do you do that? I mean, why don't you live downtown?
You've got to have an environment that attracts people.
Which has got to be safety and the perception of public safety.
Yes, and that's part of it. And then you need economic activity. You know, some of this thing they're going to do with
the
millennium.
That's the thing right
hopefully.
There. The economic activity is the big thing.
I need a coffee shop. I'm not going to live somewhere where there's not
but
a coffee
shop. But that
comes
with people. And what comes? How do you bring people? You have to make them feel safe. Because, look, there's activity wherever there's people. You know, they'll pop up and sell stuff wherever there's going to be a bunch of people. Only reason people are going to come down here is they felt safe. When I moved downtown, we had all this redevelopment going on. It was happening. There were young men and young women moving downtown. There was things happening. There was a police presence.
Yeah, but what
else evaporated.
Well, the Rams leaving is a big deal.
It is.
For us.
Yeah.
The Rams leaving, and I know it was only, eight dates a year or 10 if you want to count like preseason games.
You're right.
But not having an NFL team downtown
You just aren't.
So like
the major cities in this country are NFL cities.
All the talk about Washington, Wash Ave redeveloping and becoming a centerpiece, that was coinciding with the Rams being in town.
Yeah.
And as soon as they left.
But also the poor planning of St. Louis. And here's one quick story. Kit Bond got a bunch of money to redo the streetscape of Washington Avenue. It was awesome. We had lighting. We had this brick stuff. There was no plan to keep it going as the years went on. You know what they did to all that $100 million worth of brick? They paved it over. Ugh. Why? Because we didn't have the resources, and gosh darn it, we got to fix stuff. There just was no planning and execution behind it, kind of like what we've seen with everything else.
This city has a long, long history of poor planning, going back way before any of us were born.
The railroads?
1870s. Oh,
guys, have a great weekend. Enjoy the snook.
All y'all too.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly with us every Friday from 9 until 10. Chris and Amy show continues.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's a brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.